No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. And here we are at later in the week. We had our review show with the win that the Arizona Cardinals had this past weekend over the Philadelphia Eagles, where Seth Cox and I spoke of a variety of topics. But this is our preview show, and we have a treat for you today. As from bloggingtheboys.com, SB Nation's Dallas Cowboys team site, the Dallas Cowboys equivalent of Revenge of the Birds, I have from that site Rabble Rouser, who is one of the main contributors to the site. Rabble, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jess. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you coming on. And well, first of all, this is as big a game as have the Cowboys had as big a game yet this season?
Well, I think for us, the game at Seattle was pretty big. For a variety of reasons, obviously, they're the reigning Super Bowl champs, but also the last time we played them was a really defining game at the beginning of the 2012 season when we went to Seattle and just got bushwhacked. We got dominated on both lines of scrimmage, and I think the sting from that... it lasted a long time for us. So going back and certainly, you know, being able to compete and then actually beat them was pretty big. But in terms of showdown for first place in the NFC, we haven't had a game that big since November 2007 when the Cowboys and the Packers met the week after Thanksgiving, and both of them were one-loss teams. And there was a huge showdown for bragging rights in the NFC. It's been a long time coming.
Well, cool. I know this is for the Cardinals. We could have argued earlier in the year the game against San Francisco at home was a big one. The game in Denver was a big one. Last week's game against Philadelphia was another big one. But just how the season has played out thus far, this has turned out to be a really big game, much bigger than probably either team thought it would be leading into this season. Obviously, there was the disappointing loss against Washington. Now, take us through that. What is it that happened that game? I kind of put out there perhaps that's without knowing too much about the situation, perhaps it was a kind of a trap day. Of course, it's a division rival, but Washington, of course, is going to go into that game red hot, going to put their best effort. They got the third string quarterback. Dallas, perhaps, were they looking ahead a little bit? I mean, they got Colt McCoy starting for the Redskins, a team that really has struggled pretty much all season, and a big game on a short week not long after that. Was that just one of those letdown trap games that occurred, or did it raise some other concerns that moving forward for the Cowboys?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, my friend. What we're hoping is that, in fact, it was a trap game, and the Cowboys are so focused on the Cardinals, as they should be, because the Cardinals look really, really good, that they, looked a week ahead and forgot that, in fact, they have to, play with the same intensity that they played with all season against, even a mediocre team like, or worse than the Redskins.
Hey, they're terrible. Just put it out there. Yeah. They played well. They did get the win, but overall, if you look at their season, they've been terrible.
They've been pretty bad. So that's one narrative, and that's the one we're all sort of, we all have our eyes squinched tightly and our fingers crossed, hoping that that is in fact what happened, and that they will the Cowboys team that, we thought we all knew is a team that will suit up against Arizona. The other narrative is one in which the Cowboys were exposed against the Redskins for a couple of reasons. So the Cowboys have been playing very well this season, but as you probably know, it's very difficult to win the NFL, and the margin between winning and losing is very delicate unless you're one of those sort of super dynasty teams. I'm not sure this era of the NFL is even capable of producing. So the key for the Cowboys all season has been possessing the ball, and they've done that by being extraordinarily good, like historically good at converting third downs, and oftentimes it's been long third downs. It hasn't just been a bunch of third and ones that they've been converting. They, you know, there was a famous third and 20 against the Seahawks. They have been third and eights, third and 14s, and they have been converting those at a 59% clip going into the Redskins game. Against the Redskins, they converted like 41%, so they fell back to earth. That's still a very good percentage. It's quite respectable. But when even that amount of a drop-off made a significant difference, because for the first time since much earlier in the season, in a really weird game against the Rams, when the Rams had a 21-0 lead and the Cowboys came back, the Cowboys ran fewer plays than the opposition. In recent weeks, they've run anywhere from 20 to 25 to 27 more plays than the other team. So what that has meant is that the Cowboys' defense has not had to play as many plays. So you'll read a lot of national articles about the Cowboys' defense playing better this year. And actually, that's not really a statistically viable argument. What's happening is that they are playing fewer plays. So when you get them on the field, they're, in terms of a per, you know, yards per play kind of average, they're not any better really than last year's bunch, which was an historically bad bunch. So the whole equation depends on the Cowboys keeping the ball, converting third downs, 10 or more play drives, so that the defense is on the field for fewer plays, fewer possessions, etc. Against Washington, that didn't happen. Jim Haslett and his defensive staff dialed up a bunch of blitzes, and the Cowboys simply couldn't handle them. And on 12 third downs, which is how many the Cowboys had against Washington, Washington blitzed on all 12. So they clearly went into the game with a plan that on the money down, they were just going to send the house. And they did, and the Cowboys, frankly, didn't have a solution for it. And the really frustrating thing about this is that, in film study that I've done, but most importantly, people who do this for a living have done, they've said that none of these blitzes were exotic blitzes that Haslett hasn't shown before. So this was all stuff that they should have seen in their typical film breakdown of the Redskins. So the thing that's scaring all of us, frankly, as Cowboy fans, is that they just show the rest of the league the blueprint for stopping this Cowboys offense. And I think we're going to find out against Arizona, because Arizona's got a really good defense, and they have a 3-4. And I think they're capable of doing a lot of the things to the Cowboys that Washington tried to do last week.
And that probably to one of my next questions is dealing with that blitz. The comment was, I guess Romo said, I haven't seen that many zero blitzes, I don't know in how long. And the question was that something that wasn't even on film? So I guess it's not something that Washington had, I guess it is something that they had shown before. Is that something that they had done just not as much, that they weren't expecting? Because the Cardinals dial up the blitz a lot. Over the last two seasons since Todd Bowles took over, I think it's at 47% of the time they blitz, which is by far the most in the league. And they're really confident in doing that. They send A-gap blitz. They send blitz off the edge with the corners. Have the Cowboys just not been blitzed that often early in the season?
They haven't been blitzed that often early in the season. I think a lot of teams have looked at the running game and looked at the weapons outside and said, we don't want to give up those big plays. Because if you blitz and DeMarco Murray finds a crease, touchdown. If you blitz and you get the ball to Terrence Williams and he breaks a tackle, or Dez Bryant, he breaks a tackle, touchdown. And I think a lot of people have felt like they didn't want to do that. What they wanted to do was, to try to keep everything in front. Largely because the Cowboys have a lot of weapons on the outside. They have obviously Jason Witten. They've got a whole bevy of other receivers who are kind of like role players who have been really, really effective all year. So, yes, Romo said he hadn't seen that many zero blitzes. So it's not that he hasn't seen them, and it's not that the Redskins haven't shown him zero blitzes. I think it was the percentage of the time. I think the Redskins frankly said, you know what? We got nothing to lose. This team's a way better team. Let's just go for it. And they did. And the Cowboys were unable at any point in the evening to call off the dogs. And to call off the dogs, all you have to do is, you know, hit Dez Bryant on a slant, have him break a tackle, and let him run. And they're going to think twice about doing that. And they never once were able to do that. So the thing that made that work was that the Redskins' young and fairly inexperienced corners all held up beautifully. I mean, if you're going to zero blitz, you're putting everything on the corners. So if the Cardinals are going to do the same thing, it's going to be the same equation. If their corners can hold up, you know, in single coverage against the outside weapons that the Cowboys have, and those weapons are legitimate weapons, then they're going to be able to do the same thing. If not, then we'll see a different narrative.
Let's turn back the clock a little bit. Coming into this season, Dallas, over the last several years, it's been almost comical the way they've stayed right at 500. Adam Schefter, I know a few times, has tweeted out the stat that, you know, 8-8, then over like 3 years, it's perfectly 500. So nobody nationally was expecting this sort of play and start to the season that Dallas has had, and mainly because, well, they're talking about the defense is playing better. Well, maybe they're just playing less. Take us back to the offseason. What were the changes that happened that perhaps led to this successful start?
Great question. And actually, you know, the 500 narrative was one, of course, as Cowboy fans, that we are really, really tired of. And it not only does it go back the last three seasons, but in fact, it goes back to like the last 17 seasons.
Yes, yes, yes. It's insanely
weird. In the last 17
weird.
Seasons, there's something like 222 and 222. So, it's a long-standing situation. At any rate, I think the key day in our offseason was January 28th. On January 28th, the Cowboys hired a new offensive coordinator in Scott Linehan. So I don't know how much you know about this, but in the previous years, obviously head coach Jason Garrett had been the offensive coordinator, and he continued to be the play caller and de facto offensive coordinator in his first few years as the head guy. And then last year, they took that away from him so he could be more of a quote-unquote walk-around coach, and they gave the offensive coordinating duties to Bill Callahan. Jason Garrett was not happy with this. He didn't trust Callahan, I don't think. I don't think he particularly liked Callahan's offense. And so Callahan was sort of calling Garrett's offense. It was really a mess. The whole chain of command was really convoluted. Nobody was happy with it. And I think, you know, it was decided upon, you know, by a series of meetings that took place over the entire offseason. And it plagued their offensive game planning and play calling throughout the season. So that was the situation last year. They had to clean that up. Jason Garrett used to work in Miami with Scott Linehan, and he trusts him. He's an old friend. So when the Detroit coaching staff was sort of revamped, Linehan became available, and they hired him. The same day, Monty Kiffin, who was the Cowboys defensive coordinator last year, it was officially revealed that same day that he was going to step down, and they were going to promote the guy who came with him, Rod Marinelli, who had been their defensive line coach, to defensive coordinator. And so on January 28th, they basically hired a new offensive and a new defensive coordinator, and they have both done incredible jobs of taking the talent that already existed, adding a few new pieces, and getting everybody to either play smarter, to play harder, or some combination thereof. And I think that the key to this season has been the injection of energy that those guys have given, but even more so, I think, particularly in the case of Linehan, the Garrett offense, the Garrett/Callahan two-headed beast of an offense, whatever it was, had gotten stale. I think the players were tired of it. The fans certainly were getting tired of it. And Linehan, using a lot of the same concepts. I mean, he and Garrett agree on philosophy, but he's doing different things. And a lot of those things, you know, those kind of, you know, the sorts of schematic decisions, for example, that fans go, oh, right, of course, that plays to these guys' strengths. Why didn't the previous administration do that? So above all else, I would say that we have to give, you know, the midseason laurels have to go to those two fine gentlemen.
This is Revenge of the Birds Radio talking with Rabble Rouser from bloggingtheboys.com of SB Nation's Dallas Cowboys site. Continuing to talk about the Arizona Cardinals' upcoming game with the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. A big one, 6-1 Cardinals against 6-2 Dallas. So, obviously, the story coming into the season has been DeMarco Murray. How good has he been? And was there any evidence that he could be this guy and stay healthy? And then following that up, can he keep it up?
Well, that's actually in some ways, well, it's several questions. So let's deal with the be this guy and stay healthy. I think there's been lots of evidence that he could be this guy. The question really in the last few years has been whether or not he could stay healthy. So he's never made it through a full season before. I'm not sure he's ever made it through more than 12 games in a season before in his 3 years in the league. So he was drafted in 2011. So 11, 12, 13. Yeah, 3 years in the league. But there have been many times in which, particularly when he got even decent blocking, that he has had big games and the kind of games where, you know, you think, okay, this guy is the kind of quote unquote bell cow where you can center a game plan around him and build a passing game off of the threat he gives you, that kind of thing. So one of the interesting developments in this whole Garrett Callahan offensive amalgam that I was just talking about is that it seems like last year, we don't have absolute proof of this, but there's a lot of little hints that suggest that this is what happened. It seemed like after the bye last year, which came around week 10, that Garrett took the reins from Callahan and became the offensive coordinator again. He didn't strip him of his title or anything, but he was holding a card on the sidelines. They said that they were relaying the play calls differently. It was all going through Garrett. And suddenly, at that same time, the Cowboys discovered a running game. So the first 10 games of the year last year, their running game was woeful, A, or B, pretty good, but they would go away from it much too early in games. So there were many games last year in which DeMarco Murray would be 13 carries for, 62 yards or something with a couple of nice, 10, 12-yard runs. And people would look at that and say, why didn't you just give him twice that many carries and let him, let him do his thing? And nobody had an answer for that. So about games 11 through 16 last year, suddenly he started getting more carries, and the Cowboys' running game really started to become a significant factor in their games toward the end of the season. The problem, of course, was at the same time their defense, their entire defense was decimated by injuries, and so they were running the ball really well, but giving up 40 points a game, so it ended up being kind of moot. So I think if you look at the last six games last year, you can see the seeds of the running game and larger offensive renaissance that we've seen in the first eight games this year. And so really, I think a lot of what, even the stuff that Linehan has done this year with the running game, I think in many ways happened because he sat down with Garrett, and there's actually been some suggestions that this meeting, actually happened in this way. Sat down with Garrett, and Garrett said, hey, one of the things we're starting to do really well is run the ball. So if you're going to be here, we're going to base our offense around that. We really need to. And so that's been the plan all along. But I think that the only way they had the confidence to think that that could be a viable plan was because, they looked at the what happened at the end of last season.
Does it feel like that he's kind of a ticking time bomb with the history that he's got, that at some point he's going to break down and be on the shelf for a game or two? And if that happens, do they have to change their game plan completely, or do they have a guy behind Murray that can carry that same load?
Well, it's interesting. So there's a lot of controversy surrounding Murray because his contract is up at the end of this season. And so there are two camps here. One is this guy is the beating heart of our offense. And as I suggested early on, it's Murray's running that saves the defense, that makes the entire equation kind of go, right? This machine has an engine. That engine is DeMarco Murray. So that's one way to think about it. And the other is, he's of a certain age. There's no point in re-signing him because, he's just on the verge where running backs start to break down, and he also has an injury history. He's had a fumble history this year. But here's the thing that nobody's really talking about, except for me and a few other observers. I think he leaves a lot of yards on the field. This Cowboys offensive line is giving him some really nice creases. he's become a much better runner. This in some ways addresses your earlier question. He's become a much better runner in terms of becoming that one-cut runner who in his zone blocking system, who will run along the line of scrimmage, and then as soon as that crease opens, make that one decisive cut and go. He struggled with that earlier in his career. So he's better at that. He's better in terms of his vision at the line of scrimmage, seeing that crease open and finding it and hitting it quickly. But I tell you what, once he gets into the open field, he has no wiggle. And there have been so many times when he'll be in the open field and there'll be a blocker, usually like a wide receiver, and one defender. And all he has to do is, without losing speed, use that blocker to get past that defender, and he's off to the races. And you know, usually it's a 50-50 chance, because he's a pretty quick guy. He's like a 4-4 guy. It's a good chance that he could go to take it to the house. And I can't tell you how many times he either runs up the back of his blocker or cuts or fails to cut and ends up going to the side that the defender is on. or has to slow down so much to make his cut that linebackers or, you know, safeties are able to close, or you know, whatever space he had from bursting through the line is lost. And, you know, so several of us are thinking those creases are still going to be there regardless of who the runner is. Might a guy who has a little more wiggle in the open field, has a little bit better vision when things are moving around in the open field, might that guy not, in fact, be just as good, if not better? I don't know the answer to that. I do know that if Murray goes down, the place where they will feel his loss the most acutely is in pass protection. He's a very, very tough guy, which, of course, is part of the problem. And that toughness shows in his willingness to step up and, take on linebackers with a head of steam who are, you know, as you were just saying earlier, executing an A-gap blitz. He's really good at sort of reading the protection and sliding over to the other side to pick up a corner who's blitzing, or, you know, a free linebacker if they're doing some kind of, a zone game or something on the other side. So he's really a security blanket, and none of the other backs they have are anywhere near as good in pass protection as he is. That's one of the reasons why the coaching staff keeps saying we've got to not necessarily reduce his carries, we've got to reduce his plays. And I think that means we've got to reduce the wear and tear on him, because when he's in pass protection, he's always throwing his body run. But you know what? They can't, because whenever they put anybody else in there, that guy gets run over and Tony Romo gets put in danger. And their number one priority, believe me, is protect Tony Romo, because if he goes down, it's all lost.
So coming to the question about Tony Romo, he obviously came back from the back surgery. How has his play been any different than in years past? Obviously, the results are better. I personally, you know, as a Cardinals fan, this is taboo. Dallas is my favorite NFC East team, and it's because of Tony Romo. I wish I had him on our team. And there's a lot of people out there that really don't think much of Romo. I wish he were in it. And in my opinion, for years, there, the way the team was constructed, he was being put in a system that was asking Peyton Manning-esque type of play to carry the team. It was all on the quarterback. And he's good. He's really good. He's just not quite Peyton Manning. And so you get a few of those Romo mistakes, those untimely turnovers. How has he been this year? Is he playing any different? Is he making any different decisions? Or is it just because of the fact he's not throwing as much?
Well, that's a really interesting set of questions. Okay, so let's talk about, is he different this year than other years? I don't think he's any different this year than he was, let's say, in 2007 through 2009. In 2010... he missed a lot of the season because he suffered a broken collarbone. And he's had a series of assorted injuries in 2011, 12, and 13. So one of the things the Cowboys did, and this gestures toward the other part of your question, in 2011, they had a really, really good offensive line previous years. They decided to dismantle in 2011. And so they basically started over and built from scratch. They got Tyron Smith, who's their left tackle in the first round, and he's been a stud. He's an all-pro caliber guy. We love having him. And then they drafted a bunch of guys in the lower rounds who ended up being really, really bad. None of them are with the team, and I think very few of them are even in the league any longer. So in the last 3 years, he's, A, been getting beat up, but also he's been under incredible duress. And now, at the same time, their defense has, especially the last 2 years, not this year, but in 12 and 13, their defense has suffered historic injuries. And it's not just the injuries across the defense. What has happened is that those injuries have happened in specific position groups. So, for example, in 2012, it was all up the middle. Their defensive tackles, their middle linebackers, and their safeties, they were basically playing third stringers all through the middle because the first and second stringers all got injured. Last year, they went through like 20-plus defensive linemen because the entire position group was decimated. So what's happened is a really nasty combination where Tony Romo has not had much protection. The offensive line has been young, ineffective, or both. And the defense, as the season's gone on particularly, has been catastrophically bad because of so many injuries and other factors, but you know, that have to do with talent deficiencies. So, you know, when you were saying earlier he was expected to do a Peyton Manning-esque job, I think that's spot on. He was asked to carry this team. And so the entire strategy the last couple, 3 years has been keep the game close and give Tony Romo and then also Dan Bailey, who's their kicker, who's I think the best kicker in the league. I mean, the guy's astonishingly good, consistent. Give Tony Romo and Dan Bailey a chance to win this thing at the end. So the whole strategy has been don't fall behind early, because if we do, we don't have the talent to keep up. But if we can keep it close and we can get, you know, the ball in Tony Romo's hands at the end, we can win. So that's resulted in a lot of really clutch drives at the end of games. You know, he has, you know, I think the second most clutch drives in the fourth quarter with the game within a touchdown or something of anybody other than maybe the Manning-Brady combination in the last few years. What that also means, though, is that he's making passes under direct late in games when the game hangs in the balance. And here's the really strange thing about Tony Romo's career. He's happened to make the vast majority of his fourth quarter mistakes, those quote-unquote Romo moments, on national TV, on Monday night, on Sunday night. Now, part of that is because the Cowboys always play in those games because they're the Cowboys.
Yes, they are. But
part of that is that they tend to play those games, those big national games. They're close games. It comes down to the end, and Romo is throwing passes under duress to guys who don't exactly know what they're doing, with you know, free blitzers in his face, that kind of thing. So I'm a bit of a Romo apologist, but very few of those you know, boneheaded plays have occurred when he's had a clean pocket. You know, very few of those have occurred when Dez Bryant has, you know, a young Dez Bryant has run the correct route, you know, has read the defense correctly. So my contention is that when you ask your quarterback, and if you look at Brady's career, you know, this holds true. If you ask your quarterback to make throws late in games, when the game is on the line in a close game, he's going to make mistakes. The way to alleviate those Romo moments, as you said in your question, is to have a lead late in the game so you're not having to throw the ball. And so the big difference this year is that he's got this running game to rely on. But more importantly, you know, several of their games they've had comfortable leads late in the game. So he can afford to throw it away, because if they punt and this terrible defense gives up a four-play drive for a touchdown like they have been the last few years, it doesn't matter. They're still going to win. And in recent years, that has not been the case. So he goes into these final moments, you know, this last drive or two of the game, thinking, not only do I have to score, but I can't just throw the ball away, because if we punt, our defense is going to give up another score, and then we have no chance. So this combination of factors and the pressure it's put on him, I think, is a large part of, you know, this kind of negative Roma mythology. I think he's, you know, I've been following him for a long time. And yes, these things he does are frustrating, but I mean, the guy is a deluxe playmaker. And when he's given time, he's a surgeon. He's a terrific, accurate passer. He's a good decision maker. He's got one of the quickest releases in NFL history.
He's athletic, and so he can move.
Athletic. I mean, yeah. Oh, so back to what you were saying about his back surgery. The last few years, and because he's been getting beat up, a lot of that athleticism started to fade away. And we were like, okay, he's in his 30s. This happens. We, you know, speaking of Manning, right? Manning was never a great athlete, but now he can't move at all. And the amazing thing that we've seen this year is, thanks to this back surgery, is we're seeing this sort of youthful Romo who can move in the pocket, who can do those spin moves, who can, you know, roll
and
around
shake
outside.
Shake off J.J. Watt.
Shake off J.J. Watt and Bruce Irvin in back-to-back weeks. I mean, so these kind of plays, we haven't seen that quickness in a long time. And so in some ways, we're seeing a Romo renaissance. You know, we're seeing a 2007, 2008 kind of Romo, which is been great, but the amazing thing is he hasn't had to do that all the time. So he has a few of those plays in him every game, and those games have been, you know, huge contributing factors to wins this season. But he's not having to, I mean, literally the last couple of years, he's had to do that. The thing he did with J.J. Watt, he's had to do that 30 times a game because he's been under such duress. And so now, you know, you can do it a couple times a game, make a play, and then go back to the huddle, hand off to Murray for 7, and everything's good.
All right, heading into the matchup this week, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio talking to Rabble Rouser from bloggingtheboys.com, previewing the Arizona Cardinals matchup with the Dallas Cowboys. The injury report is out. Doug Free did not practice. Leary didn't practice. McClain was limited. Romo didn't practice for a second day in the row. You've got Anthony Spencer limited. Brandon Carr fully practiced. Bruce Carter was limited. Of these players, who is the most likely and least likely to play on Sunday, just based on what the feel is?
That's a good question. I think almost all of these guys are probably going to play. Bruce Carter's coming back from a quad injury he suffered against New Orleans, so that's a precautionary thing. Rolando McClain has been getting some precautionary time off because he's such a key to the defense. The guys who I really think have a chance of missing the game are Doug Free, who is their right tackle, is if he comes back, it'll be against Arizona, but that's sort of a 50-50 proposition. He got injured against Seattle. And Ron Leary got injured last week, late in the game against the Skins. He hurt little groin tweak, so he's also a 50-50 thing. The real question, and this is back to our Romo conversation, is Romo. So he had a contusion, quote unquote, but you know, they also had a CT scan. They've been doing a lot of other stuff, checking his spine and that kind of thing. I think one of the things about this whole injury last week for Cowboy fans is, how much is the team telling us the truth about Romo's injury? Is it actually worse than what they're letting on? Because, you know, they're saying, it's a confusion. If, you know, if I can handle the pain, I can play. And we're wondering how much that might be on the part of the coaching staff, so that, you know, the Cardinals have to prepare for both Romo and potentially Brandon Whedon. Or if it really is one of those situations where if the game was today, there's no way he could go, but they're holding out hope that, you know, he can, even though he'd maybe not practicing all week, but he can still play in the game. So I think the one to really watch it is Romo, and I really honestly think that might come down to a Saturday night decision, and that nobody's going to know until you know the news starts breaking on those NFL Today type shows. Yes. On Sunday morning. I think either way, especially given what Romo looked like after he came back from his injury, I think either way it's good news for Carr fans. A less mobile, or even more, perhaps more importantly, a less confident in the pocket Romo. A Romo who maybe looks more like he did the first couple weeks in the season when he doesn't quite trust his back is a good thing for you guys. And obviously a Brandon Whedon is a good thing for you guys. Now, Whedon looked terrific when he came in last week. He led two drives. He actually looked much better than Romo. Did
we know it's not before. Real. We know that's not real. It's
no,
Brandon
Whedon. I don't think so. Although, you know, he's in a much better system now, and he's has a lot better talent. He's
yes,
a much
yes.
better offensive line.
He can throw the ball down. I mean, that's Bruce Arians talked about. The guy's got a great arm.
He's got a great arm, and he made a couple of really nice throws. Now, do I trust him to be able to decipher all the kind of zone dogs and things like that the Cardinals are going to throw at him? Hell no. No. So I think either way, you know, you guys, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say you lucked into this. because this is the way the NFL works, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This injury came at a fortuitous time for the Cardinals because I don't think you're going to see the Cowboys offense at full strength because they're going to be limited at quarterback either way. And as we said earlier, if their entire winning formula depends on possession, on converting third downs, sometimes by, you know, getting in manageable third down and distance, but other times by sort of heroic conversions of third and longs, that's just not going to happen as much when you have a compromised Romo or you have Whedon, the second stringer. So there's that issue, and then of course there's the issue of did the Skins show the rest of the league how to slow down this offense? So either way, I think I have to say in both those categories, it's advantage Arizona.
All right, heading into this game, we're gonna go a couple more things. Just matchups, in terms of matchups that you see, where do you see the Cowboys matching up the best against the Cardinals, and then matching up the least well against the Cardinals this weekend?
That's a really interesting question. Well, I think that the offensive line last week had a kind of collective mulligan situation. So if in fact their two starters who are missing continue to miss, then the game is off. But I think that if they can get back either Free or Ron Leary or both, that the place where they're going to be most dominant is with their most dominant position group, and that's the offensive line. And if the offensive line is working, then I think a lot of other things will work. So I respect and recognize the talent and ability of the Cardinals front seven. So I'm not saying that it's going to be easy, but I think that the Cowboys offensive line has manhandled everybody this year. And they've manhandled a lot of really good defenses, defensive fronts. And so if they're on their game, I think that's where we have an advantage that I think we can rely on, that we can trust. Where we have a distinct disadvantage, I think, is I'm actually going to give you two. One is our linebacking core. So Justin Durant, who is our team captain or one of the team captains and the leading tackler on a defense, tore his bicep against the Redskins and is out for the season. They've been playing musical linebackers all year anyway. Like I said earlier, that, you know, Rolando McClain has been nursing some kind of injury or other the entire year, missed the Rams game. And, you know, he's been missing a lot of practice because they're just trying to get him to the game every week. They have shuffled the linebacker roles around because Durant, weak side linebacker, is out. And so now they're moving Bruce Carter, who had been their strong side linebacker, and he just came back last week, back to the weak side where played last year and didn't play well, and now they're bringing in Kyle Wilbur, who's been their backup strong side guy, to the strong side. Okay, so this is all a way of saying that this unit is going to be experiencing something new, and so, you know, a guy like Ellington, who can do a lot of damage underneath in the short zone, is going to find room to run after he makes catches, and I think that's particularly true because the Cardinals have some speed at receiver. So this is the second thing. I'm worried about the Cowboys cornerback's ability to match up one-on-one with the Cardinals receivers when the Cardinals are in three wide formations. I think the Cowboys, you know, I actually like their collection of corners. And I think that it's not that they don't match up well at all. It's that the place where they seem to struggle matching up, or at least the coaching staff seems afraid of the matchup, is when the other team has legitimate speed on the outside. And so the Cardinals are one of those teams that can boast a legitimate, like, track guy who can, you know, as we saw last week, who can get deep and make a game-changing play. So what that's going to mean is that the Cowboys linebackers are going to be A, a little bit confused because they're in new positions, and B, playing deeper than usual because the safeties are going to have to play deeper than usual. So they're going to have to sort of try to seal off the underside of intermediate routes, which means that a guy like Ellington can release and find all kinds of room to run. So that whole combination of the threat over the top, but also, you know, the ability to just gain 8, 10, 12 and underneath passes that only travel 3 or 4 yards is something that I'm nervous about going in.
Okay. one final question. This is where I like to, and I was going to use the line, only I just looked up the line and there is no line for this game yet.
That's because of the Romo situation.
Yes. Yeah. So obviously Cowboys fan, you're going to likely pick the, how do you see this game playing out? Either do you give a prediction, or if the Cowboys win, how will it happen?
I have a prediction. I think that I could see it going either way. I think in many ways, this is probably the most difficult opponent they've played all year. And I would say that even if, you know, Romo is healthy. I think the Cardinals right now are playing better than, for example, the 49ers were when we faced them week one. And I think they're playing better than the Seahawks were when we faced them, even though we had to go to Seattle to play them. I think the Cowboys win if they can run the ball. I think the Cowboys are going to play a much better game. I think they recognize that this opponent is a very talented, difficult opponent. I think that they see the significance of this game for playoff seeding and all that kind of stuff should have come down to that. But I also think that, you know, in some ways, the worst time to face a team like the Cowboys is, or you know, any team like that, is after they've just lost a game to an inferior opponent on national TV, right? So that's embarrassing. And so they're going to have, I would suspect, a really good, although short, a really good week of practice. I think they're going to be focused, and I think they're going to be aggressive. You know, their hallmark in their winning streak, their six-game winning streak before they lost last week, was they may not be the most talented defense, but they hustle the ball, and they're very, very physical. We didn't see that physicality at all last week. And we didn't really even see a particularly physical offensive line. Their offensive line has been punishing people. And, you know, one of the little sort of miniature stats that we've been pulling out is opponents' records the week after they faced the Cowboys. And last week it's like 1-6, I think. So teams are having a hard time winning the week after they play the Cowboys because the Cowboys have been beating on them. That wasn't the case last week. And so I expect them to go back to that physical nature. So I expect the Cardinals to play a very physical game. So I'm looking forward to a real good old, you know, beat them up, pin your ears back, slugfest. If the Cowboys can run the ball, I think they can win the game. If the Cardinals can stop his run, and unless, you know, there's some sort of miraculous series of events that happen on third downs, then the Cardinals can win the game. Now, that's all things being even. Here's the other thing that is a real key. One of the things the Cowboys have done the last month, even though they've been winning, is turning the ball over more than they've been generating turnovers. And if the Cardinals defense has done anything well this year, it's generating turnovers. I think they have 14 so far this year. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so that's two a game. That's some special sauce right there. So, there's already a kind of setup here, right? The Cowboys are a team that turns the ball over. The Cardinals are a team that takes it away. If that continues, then I don't care how well the Cowboys run the ball, they're not going to win. They've been overcoming a negative turnover margin through, as I suggested earlier, miraculous and historic third down conversion percentages that have allowed them to possess the ball, even though they are wasting possessions by turning the ball over at the end of them. So if that happens, I don't think they're going to be able to sustain offense consistently enough against the Cardinals to grind out, you know, 5-10 plus play drives over the course of the game and still win if they turn the ball over two or three times. So you know, that those are two key what's the word I'm trying to think of here. If the Cowboys winning formula is an equation, those are two key variables, and if either of those variables goes in the Cardinals' favor, I think they leave Dallas with a win.
All right, Rob, really appreciate the it turned out to be a much longer chat than I thought we would have, and I really appreciate the time. Again, Arizona Cardinals fans, this is Rabble Rouser from bloggingtheboys.com. Rabble, your handle is simply that, Rabble Rouser, is it not?
It is. It's at Rabble Rouser, but it's RABBLER. I've dropped one of the vowels there, and come follow me on Twitter,
and head on over to get some good conversation with some crazy Cowboys fans out there at bloggingtheboys.com, and we'll see how this plays out on Sunday. Thanks for
all
coming
right,
good
on luck.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
Introducing summer-powered offers from Vodafone. Right now, when you choose our SIM-only offer for just £17 a month, you'll get double data, a huge 10 gigs. Check out all our summer-powered offers in store or visit vodafone.co.uk. Vodafone, power to you.
Offer ends 16th of August. Minimum term agreement, credit check and terms apply. Each April, your bundle price will increase by an amount equal to the RPI rate published in March of that year. See vodafone.co.uk/RPI.